Online news site Rappler ordered to shut down by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Rappler unfazed by the SEC order and vows to exhaust all legal means to prevent its closure. Customs officials deny allegations linking them to the smuggling of agricultural products. And an international rights group says the recent Philippine polls failed to meet the standard of free, honest, and fair elections. We'll discuss that with the commissioner of the internal, make that international observer's mission, former Senator of Australia, Lee Rhiannon. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story at this hour, the Securities and Exchange Commission orders the shutdown of online news site Rappler for violating the constitutional restrictions on foreign ownership. The SEC says it's merely enforcing a decision back in 2018, canceling Rappler's certificate of incorporation. It ruled the site allowed foreign investor Omidyar Network to hold Philippine Depositary Receipts, or PDRs. PDRs allow foreign entities to invest but not control companies in the country. The SEC now points out Omidyar donating its PDRs to the staff of Rappler is merely an afterthought in a bid to escape a violation that was already committed. It adds Omidyar also waived its rights to the PDRs when proceedings against the matter were ongoing. Well, Rappler vows to fight the SEC shutdown order by using all legal means. Rappler's lawyer, Francis Lim, says they can take the matter up to the Supreme Court. The news site adds the proceedings that led to the SEC order were highly irregular.
We strongly disagree with the decision. And fortunately for us, we have legal remedies available to question the decision before our courts of law. So rest assured that we will do so on behalf of the Rappler Group. And we are confident that at the end of the day, we shall prevail. There is a question whether this SEC decision was properly done. And in our view, it was irregular, highly irregular, because we were not given due process.
Rappler CEO Maria Ressa unfazed by the SEC order.
We've gone through this before. I think you've seen the way we've reacted to it. We have plans A through Z. It's like quicksand right now. Our goal is to continue holding the line. You've heard me say that forever. We're not going to voluntarily give up our rights. And we really shouldn't. I've continued to appeal for that, because when you give up your rights, you're never going to get them back. Starting in 2019, I had 10 arrest warrants, right? So these new normals should not be normal. We should demand better.
Bayamuna Chairperson Neri Colmenares slams the SEC's closure order on Rappler. Colmenares sees the move as a way to silence fearless journalism. He warns the shutdown of media institutions like Rappler, ABS-CBN, and alternative news sites only further destroys the country's pillars for checks and balances. The Office of the Prosecutor in Davao City dismisses the cyber libel complaints filed by Davao-based businessman Dennis Oy against ABS-CBN over its news reports. The Office of the Prosecutor said the complaints were dismissed due to lack of probable cause. Oy earlier claimed ABS-CBN stories on the Malampaya deal, which quoted the graft complaint against him, were libelous. But the prosecutor's office said they were not defamatory. Last week, outgoing Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi withdrew his libel and cyber libel complaints against ABS-CBN and six other news organizations over their stories on the Malampaya deal. ABS-CBN is the parent firm of this news channel. The lawyer of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. believes the Supreme Court took into consideration Marcos's inauguration this Thursday in its speedy decision on petitions challenging his client's electoral victory. The High Court on Tuesday voted 13-0, declaring Marcos is eligible to run and be elected to public office despite his conviction in a tax case. The Supreme Court took only just a little over 1.5 months to decide on the petitions.
the Supreme Court is cognizant of the reality of the situation that the Constitution provides in explicit terms that the term incoming president shall start on June 30. What is at stake is the confidence of the people as to the legitimacy, appropriateness of the assumption of office. To move of Bongbong workers of the presidency.
America's second gentleman, Douglas Emhoff, has arrived in Manila. The husband of U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is leading the American delegation to Thursday's inauguration of President-elect Marcos Jr. Meanwhile, China's vice president is representing Chinese leader Xi Jinping at that event. Joyce Belanja has more on the preparations for tomorrow's ceremony.
President-elect Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr.'s inauguration on June 30 will be simple, solemn, and traditional. France Imperial, one of the heads of the preparation committee, says the program is all set, except for some minor details that are still being finalized. Just like what Marcos said in his vlog, they will stick to tradition during the presidential inauguration. On the morning of June 30, President-elect Marcos will visit the Malacañang Palace to greet outgoing President Rodrigo Duterte, after which Duterte will be given departure honors. Marcos will then proceed to the National Museum for the inaugural ceremony. The program will start with TV host and actress Tony Gonzaga singing the Philippine National Anthem. After this, the ecumenical invocation will follow. A 30-minute military and civic parade will then be held, and the inaugural song, Pilipinas Kumahal, will be performed by artist Chris Villonco and the Young Voices of the Philippines Choir. The Senate President will read the joint resolution by the National Board of Canvassers proclaiming Marcos and Vice President-elect Sara Duterte. At exactly 12 noon, Marcos will take his oath before Supreme Court Chief Justice Alexander Hismundo to be followed by a 21-gun salute. Marcos will then deliver his inaugural speech. His camp has not yet bared the contents of the message. An inaugural reception for other officials and foreign dignitaries will be held after, still at the National Museum. Marcos will then go back to the palace to formally assume office. There, he will administer the oath of his cabinet members and will host an inaugural dinner for the guests. A concert will be held in Mindiola in the evening. According to the Department of Interior and Local Government, around 1,250 guests are expected at the National Museum. Around 18,000 policemen, firemen, soldiers, and emergency services personnel will be deployed in Manila.
Sinitingnan natin, no, pinaluluwag yung lugar para doon sa ibigay ito dito sa mga pupunta rito natin, mga kababayan, supporters ng ating mahal na Pangulo. Tinitingnan natin kaya natatanggal na ng iba pang mga steel barrier. Tinitingnan din natin yan. At para mapaluwag pa natin yung lugar.
The Interior Department appeals to the local governments to provide venues for public viewing of the inauguration.
Kami po ay we also encourage the different local government units na mag-sponsor ng mga live streaming sa kanikanilang mga lugar para po doon sa mga kababayan natin ay hindi na kailangan pumunta pa at manood personally.
While rallies will be allowed in Freedom Parks, the Interior Department is encouraging protesters to stage them online instead.
Ang pakiusap lang po namin sa kanila, please keep your protest peaceful. Huwag na po tayong makipag-gitgitan. Huwag na po nating gawa ng eksena pa ito.
The Manila Police District and the Presidential Security Group also held a dry run for security measures.
What I can tell you today is a simulation of what will happen on April, on June 30.
That's all you can share?
Yes.
Meanwhile, among those who are expected as guests is Chinese Vice President Wang Qishan. He will attend on behalf of Chinese President Xi Jinping. Joyce Balanjo, ABS-CBN News.
Bagong Alyansang Makabayan Secretary General Renato Reyes asserts they will not be holding a protest during Marcos's inauguration that will cause chaos and violence. The group will hold an assembly tomorrow at the Liwasang Bonifacio in Manila. Reyes also denied their group will march towards the National Museum, the venue of Marcos's oath-taking. He also called the police's suggestion to bring the protest online ridiculous.
This statement that you should just go online to protest, it's really ridiculous. It's hypocritical and stupid because it's the state which has been preventing and suppressing our presence online. Remember, our website was blocked last week by the NTC. We have to show the incoming administration that we are not going to stand for the same repressive policies that have been happening and being imposed during the Duterte regime. We have to be there to be present to remind the incoming administration that we're not about to forget the abuses committed under the Marcos dictatorship.
A human rights group claims the Philippines failed to meet the international standard of free, honest, and fair elections when it held the May 9 polls. The report of the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines says last month's elections were marred by alleged vote buying, disinformation, and human rights violations. It also cited problems in the actual vote counting process. The group urges the Philippine government to revamp the Election Commission and its electronic vote counting system. Well, joining us now is former Australian Senator Lee Rhiannon. She is the commissioner of the International Observers Mission, which conducted the study on the 2022 Philippine polls. Commissioner, good afternoon from Manila. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right, so let's begin with your conclusion. In that report, you said the evidence is just overwhelming. The national Philippine elections clearly failed the people of the Philippines. You went on to say that Marcos Jr. and Vice President-elect Sara Duterte were not elected legitimately. What is your proof for saying this, Senator?
Well, look, the proof is extensive and it comes from a very thorough work over many months. As well as our seven commissioners, we had 60 observers from 11 countries. They worked very thoroughly on the ground from the beginning of April. They were documenting the campaign, looking at how the vote proceeded and also the aftermath in many areas. And what we found was deeply alarming. And that's why we concluded that we cannot say that this was a fair, free and honest election. That's why Marcos Jr. and Sara Duterte are not legitimate candidates. And now suits many Western countries, and they will be obviously at these big celebrations, to make out that it's democracy. But this isn't democracy when there's so much violence. Many people were not able to vote. Many scandals to do with the actual voting process. This is very well documented in our report, and we've made many recommendations.
But here's the thing, Commissioner, how do you then reconcile your findings with the reality on the ground even prior to the elections? You talk to people here and they would say even prior to May 9 that their vote is going to go to Marcos Jr. You have survey outputs that time and again have confirmed this reality. And of course, on the day of the election and post the count, you got to talk about the 31 million vote mandate for Marcos Jr. and 32 for Vice President-elect Sara Duterte Carpio. Add to that, the foreign governments now recognizing the incoming administration. How do you reconcile your findings with that reality?
Well, firstly, just to start with why some foreign Western governments are swinging in behind the new regime. It's not actually surprising. Let's remember when soon-to-be former president, Mr. Duterte, came in 2016. He pledged to shift his country's foreign policy away from the United States. His first trip was to Beijing. He then said it's time to say goodbye to Washington. He then flips and comes back to the United States. And considering the Philippines is in such a strategic geographic position, the US is now courting the new regime and the new leaders. So it's not surprising that they came in behind the whole voting process. But then let's remember, and yes, you've given us figures there, but what we've also found from our studies is the number of people who were unable to vote. Like, there's 1.7 million registered overseas foreign workers. Only 480,000 of them were able to register. Then there was a loss of almost 900,000 votes in the Bayan Muna party list, and I do apologise for my pronunciation. And then there's a whole question of the electronic voting. Like, this is a major international scandal. It's run by this company, Smartmatic, and it's very questionable if it should have even been given the contract, considering it's less than 60% Filipino-owned, which is inconsistent with constitutional requirements. But the COMELEC, your electoral body that runs elections, brought them in. And a number of people have actually been charged in terms of data interference and system interference. And I think it's very worrying the way that was conducted when you find out that many of the voting machines did not work. A number of the votes had to be left with the staff at the polling booths, which then removes the secrecy of the ballot, which should be integral to any democratic process. So the vote is under a huge cloud, and that's why our findings are really very adamant that this is more than a problematic election. It is actually not legitimate.
But you're also saying that there must be an overhaul of the election system. Your local partner also here is saying that it's not going, your findings won't be able to overturn the votes, but that more importantly, there has to be an overhaul of the election system. So if you're going to start off with that, where do you begin?
Oh, look, yes, that's what we really want to talk about. And we acknowledge, and I just saw your earlier report, the celebrations are about to occur. And yes, many people see them as illegitimate, but they're going ahead. And so we're realistic. So we have a comprehensive set of recommendations. We're very clear that the military must be excluded from all aspects of the electoral process. The party list system became very controversial in this election, and it does need to be returned to its original constitutional intention, which was to represent marginalised and underrepresented groups. That really is essential. And if any leaders who have been elected, as I would argue Marcos Jr. and Sara Duterte have, want to rebuild their reputation, they would start with many of our recommendations. The issue of vote buying needs to be addressed. I really don't think anybody's denying how rampant it was. I was shocked at the reports and the evidence we were receiving. The huge amounts of money, the figures that we received was it was between 300 and 4,000 pesos per candidate was what was being handed over. And often people were collecting money from more than one candidate. That's not democracy when money's being thrown around in that way. We need a free press. There needs to be substantial social media reforms. And there's a complexity there. We acknowledge it. But the issue of fake news is extraordinary. And the other one that I am very interested in, and again, we know who the new leaders are, is how do we address the issue of political dynasties, which is now really another big factor that clouds the electoral system in the Philippines, where a few families have so much control, not just at the top level, but right down through the voting system.
Well, finally, sorry about that, Commissioner, but finally, you know, we're just counting hours. In fact, just about 24 hours before the inauguration of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. How do you think your findings are going to affect his incoming presidency?
Look, it has to affect the incoming presidency. The struggle around human rights reforms will be ongoing. And the future needs to ensure that we address not just the electoral issues, but the living conditions of people. I think a very big one needs to be that the government needs to look at food prices, because there'll be otherwise rising famine, as there will be in many parts of the world. So there's social and economic measures that need to be addressed, as well as the very fundamental electoral issues that I've outlined. And again, if the new president and deputy president are sincere about honor of working for all the people in the Philippines, they will address many of the issues that we've taken up.
Former Senator of Australia Lee Rhiannon, who's also the Commissioner of the International Observers Mission, we appreciate you taking time to talk to us this afternoon. Thanks again. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you.
Going back to our top story today, online news site Rappler vows to fight the SEC shutdown order by using all legal means. Joining us now, the CEO of Rappler, Nobel Peace Prize winner Maria Ressa. Maria, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Casey. What a day.
I know, right? I was there in your virtual press conference earlier today, but I want to ask you first, how's the Rappler newsroom doing with this latest development? How is it taking it? How is it taking everything in?
I think, you know, it's been several years that we've had to live with this. And when you carry it all the way through, you know, one of the things I've always said is whatever it is we're most afraid of, we have to embrace it. And then we have to figure out what we do. What is the worst case scenario that you have? And then figure out how you change it, how you make it better, how you get over the fear. And that's what we've done. I think, you know, I had said, you know, by now it's been 6 years. And we're just doing our jobs and we will continue doing our jobs. But we're now able to have plans A through Z. We have lawyers who will hold the line with us, who will make sure that we follow rule of law and that the government follows rule of law.
Real talk now, Maria, is press freedom the collateral damage here, or was this really the goal, to attack it and keep you guys silent?
It's global. You know, it isn't just us. I would say Facebook did. Katie Harbath agreed with me. The Philippines is patient zero. But the Cambridge Analytica whistleblower, Chris Wiley, called us a petri dish, right, where these kinds of tactics of mass manipulation, where in one case, for example, history was changed in front of our eyes. These tactics were tested. And who were the targets? The real targets were the West, America, at that point in 2016. So look, I mean, I've called it death by a thousand cuts, not just of press freedom, but of our democracy. And we have to hold the line. ABS has gone through this. You know the kinds of uncertainty we can live through. And I think that it's 2022. We're coming up 2 days before a new administration comes in. And you heard me say this in the press conference. You know, I appeal to the incoming administration to strengthen rule of law, to look at journalists not as the enemies, but as partners, because they will need checks and balances as we move into this extremely difficult world.
Maria, listening to that virtual press con earlier today, and as you just repeated now, you kept on repeating that you will not voluntarily surrender your rights. You will continue to hold the line. But what do you say to the SEC order that basically said it's precisely those rights that were abused and they're just making things right by virtue of this order, Maria?
So let me not move into the legal thing. What I'll just say is it's a tactic of gaslighting. And it's happened all around the world, whatever, you know, an illiberal force or whenever rule of law is kind of bent to the point that it's nearly broken, whatever. I mean, these are loopholes. I mean, Carmina, look, I've been a journalist for 36 years, and in less than 2 years, I got 10 arrest warrants. I'm sorry, let me, you know, I had 10 arrest warrants. How is that possible? So I haven't changed, we continue to do our jobs. And on the SEC, we'll take it. We will appeal. We will take that decision. You heard Francis Lin, who used to be the former president of the Philippine Stock Exchange. There's a difference between shares of stocks and Philippine depository receipts. And, you know, I said three things at the beginning. The first is that We have always maintained that our original agreements, the Philippine depository receipts, were constitutional. Independence was the reason why we set up Raptor. There's a clause in our shareholders agreement that gives the power, the money power, to journalists, right? We make the final decisions. I think the second thing is that this is the first time the SEC has acted in this way on press freedom issues against a news organization. And, you know, we cannot, I certainly can't, look at that and say it's all right, because it gives up our rights. And then I think finally, the last part of this is that the implications of accepting this, right? Our original statement in January 2018, which is when the attempt to revoke our license happened, just showed you how this is unprecedented. Just because it's normalized, I'm shocked ABS-CBN has no franchise. That's shocking, and we all should be shocked. These death by a thousand cuts, they're not small cuts. They're huge gashes. So we need to protect our democracy. Otherwise, we will lose it.
In a way, Maria, do you think that with this SEC order, that it sort of paves a clear way, a clear path forward, and that points all the way up to the Supreme Court?
You've heard our chief counsel, Francis Lim, talk about this. He certainly lined up a legal strategy that will take it up. I guess the reason I announced it this morning, I was given the keynote as the East-West Center Conference. There were more than 300 journalists in the room. And I felt that, you know, the only defense a journalist has is to shine the light. And so this kind of transparency, I hope, will demand better. I mean, you know, this was the reason why, for example, at the Peninsula siege, ABS-CBN did not leave the Peninsula, right? Because when you do leave, the only people who would have been left there would have been the forces of the military. At that point, it was the police. So it's that moment again. There's a lot riding, and I hope that the incoming administration looks at journalists as partners, as checks and balances, the way leadership has in the past, instead of as enemies to be killed. Sorry, let me not use that word. Enemies to be shut down.
Maria, you know, just when you think that everything's going to be, you know, sober and silent and everything's going to get better, there is one case and then another case and then another case and then another case, and things seem to get from worse to worse. But let me ask you, what do you think can turn the tide for you and Rappler from here onwards?
On our end, we demand the light. So everything that is done must withstand public scrutiny. And I gotta say, of the 10 10 arrest warrants I have, they're a little bit, you know, like Kafkaesque. They're a little bit laughable. The cyber libel case I and a former colleague were convicted of was for a story that was written in 2012. So that was whenever beyond the statute of limitations of libel. Libel statute of limitations was changed. It was a story I didn't write, edit, or supervise at a time when the law we supposedly violated didn't even exist, right? There has to be some accountability. Otherwise, we don't have rule of law. And I believe the Philippines has a potential. There really is a potential for us geopolitically right now, where we can strengthen our democracy despite the economic downturn, despite the war in Ukraine. Journalists are partners in this. And one of the things, I'll say the last thing on this, Carmina, is that, you know, we did this facts first pyramid together. It was the first time globally that there was a whole of society approach where journalists were working together with a second layer, with civil society, with research organizations, and with lawyers in the fourth layer, right? And it worked. I think we need to reimagine the world. And if we do that, this is how we come out of it. Having said that, the quick answer to your question is hold the line. We may lose. We're coming up against a full, you know, tremendous power. But we also have the light. We shine the light on every action point.
Maria Ressa there, CEO of Rappler and also Nobel Peace Prize winner. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know it's you're in Hawaii now, but thank you for taking time out to be with us this afternoon. Thanks again. Take care and you keep safe.
You too. Thanks.
And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, China relaxes its COVID measures for inbound travelers. More on that story when we come back. Stay with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We're back. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Online news site Rappler ordered to shut down by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Rappler unfazed by the SEC order and vows to exhaust all legal means to prevent its closure. And customs officials deny allegations linking them to the smuggling of agricultural products. Active COVID-19 cases in the Philippines rise to 7,192. That's the highest since April 29. That's after 576 new infections were reported Tuesday. Nearly half of the new cases were from Metro Manila. Despite the uptick, the National Capital Region will remain under the least restrictive COVID-19 alert level until July 15. The health department allays concerns about placing Metro Manila under the least stringent COVID alert level despite the rise in infections. Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergere says Filipinos should learn to live with the virus. But she reminds the public to remain cautious as she cites mobility patterns as one of the contributing factors to the uptick in cases.
Yun, hindi na ho tayo nandun sa direksyon na gusto natin magsasara, magbubukas. Ang sa atin po, tinuturuan natin ang ating mga kababayan that we should live with this virus. Kailangan protektahan natin ang ating sarili by receiving our vaccines and also doing and complying our safety protocols katulad po ng pagmamask. Gusto ko lang hong paalalahanan ng ating mga kababayan ang atin po talagang contributing factors ngayon kung bakit tayo ay nagkakaroon na mas mataas na kaso, nagkakahawa-hawaan. It's because of our mobility patterns. Yun pong atin pong mababang vaccine uptake, especially for our booster shots. At saka yung pagsunod po natin sa minimum public health standards.
China cuts the quarantine period for inbound travelers by half. Travelers going to China will now only need to spend 7 days in a quarantine facility and self-monitor for the next 3 days. That move is one of the biggest shifts after the country implemented one of the most stringent COVID-19 policies in the world. But officials say this is not a sign of reopening yet. The development comes after major cities in the country reported no new locally transmitted infections on Monday. Well, back here at home, tropical depression Caloy is almost stationary off the coast of Iba, Zambales. ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas now tells us how this will affect the weather in Luzon and throughout the rest of the country. Ariel, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. The low-pressure area over the West Philippine Sea developed into a tropical depression last night and was assigned the local name Caloy. It was last spotted 375 kilometers west of Iba, Zambales, packing winds of 45 kilometers per hour near its center and with gusts up to 55 kilometers per hour. As you have mentioned, it is almost stationary now over the West Philippine Sea. Caloy is not expected to hit land and there will be no hoisting of tropical cyclone wind signals, but it will enhance the Habagat. Pagasa says it may leave the Philippine area of responsibility tonight or after midnight. Today, monsoon rains will be experienced over Palawan, Occidental Mindoro, Batangas, Cavite, Pampanga, Bataan, Zambales, and Western Pangasinan. Western Visayas and the rest of the zone will be cloudy with scattered rains. And here in Metro Manila, we will also be mostly cloudy with higher chances of rain in the afternoon and evening. Thunderstorms are also expected this afternoon over Eastern Visayas and most of Mindanao. Tomorrow, Thursday, another low-pressure area may form over the Philippine Sea east of northern Luzon from the broad circulation of Caloy. This new disturbance will track northward towards Ryukyu Islands. Should it develop inside the Philippine area of responsibility as a tropical depression, it will be given the local name Domeng and help further enhance the Habagat. During the presidential inauguration of President-elect Marcos, rains may be possible early in the morning until before 8, and it will just be cloudy during the oath-taking. However, as the rains are dependent on the gusts of Habagat, there may still be a chance of light rains during the inauguration. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel. Take care and keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, baseless. That's how Philippine Customs Commissioner Ray Leonardo Guerrero described allegations against him after he was tagged as a protector of agricultural smugglers in an intelligence report submitted to the Senate. Guerrero vehemently denied being involved in smuggling. Other customs officials included in the list are also denying the accusations against them. The BOC has started an investigation into the matter.
Yes, we have personalities that are within our ranks and even from other agencies as well. No? Dun sa ano sa mga kasong final namin, I think yung mga ni-refer namin for investigation and proper appropriate filing of cases na mga government officials, ibinigay namin yun sa either sa Presidential Anti-Corruption Commission or sa Office of the Ombudsman.
Another alleged protector of smugglers, Tuburan Cebu Mayor Aljun Diamante, challenged his accusers to back their claims. Senators Nancy Binay and Joel Villanueva meanwhile defended Navotas Mayor Toby Tianco. The senators believe the inclusion of Tianco's name in the list is a result of failed intelligence. After another break, still ahead, the Philippines listed among the 10 worst countries for working people. More on that when we come back. This is Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky urges the United Nations to visit the site of a deadly missile strike on a shopping mall in the city of Kremenchuk. Speaking at the emergency session of the UN Security Council, Zelensky says the UN can send a representative to independently confirm that Russia was indeed responsible for the attack on the building, which left 18 dead and 36 others missing. Moscow, however, is claiming it hit a nearby weapons depot, but the explosion sparked the blaze at the shopping center, which it insists was not operational at that time. G7 leaders urge countries and companies with large food stockpiles to help ease the hunger crisis sparked by Russia's war in Ukraine. They're also pledging an additional $4.5 billion to combat global food insecurity, bringing the total sum committed this year to more than $14 billion. The war in Ukraine, a country known as Europe's breadbasket, has pushed up food prices and led to shortages. This as Russia's blockade of Black Sea ports prevents millions of tons of grain from being shipped out. The crisis has sparked fears of famine in countries highly reliant on Ukrainian exports. Russia denies being responsible for the food crisis, blaming delivery disruptions on Western sanctions instead. Turkey has dropped its objections to Finland and Sweden joining NATO. Finland's president said Turkey, Finland, and Sweden signed a joint memorandum that underscored their commitment to extend full support against threats to each other's security. The Nordic nations applied for NATO membership in May, but Turkey objected, accusing the two countries of harboring terrorists. This comes ahead of what is shaping up to be a critical NATO summit in Madrid. Their allied leaders will decide whether to invite Finland and NATO to join the alliance. The Philippines slams Taiwan for conducting live fire drills near Ligao Island. The Philippine Foreign Affairs Department called the military exercises unlawful. It points out Ligao Island is an integral part of the Kalayaan Island group, over which the Philippines has sovereignty. It adds Taiwan's illegal activity raises tensions and complicates the situation in the South China Sea. In other news, former U.S. President Donald Trump grabbed the steering wheel of his limousine in a bid to join the crowd marching on the U.S. Capitol last year. This was revealed to the House Committee investigating the violence by Cassidy Hutchinson, an assistant to Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows. But Hutchinson said Trump demanded to march with a crowd. Hutchinson was a central figure in the administration and was able to offer the committee its first blow-by-blow account of activity inside the White House. She testified that Trump and some of his top lieutenants were aware of the possibility of violence, contradicting claims the assault was spontaneous and had nothing to do with the administration.
I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here. Let the people in. Take the mags away.
As an American, I was disgusted. It was unpatriotic. It was un-American. We were watching the Capitol building get defaced over a lie.
On his social media network, Trump dismissed Hutchinson's claims as a fake story and called the House hearing a kangaroo court. The congressional panel has now held six public hearings to outline its initial finding. Trump led a criminal conspiracy to overturn his defeat to Joe Biden that led to the violence. In business, the Philippines lands in the list of the 10 worst countries for working people. The International Trade Union Confederation's Global Rights Index 2022 cited violence and murder, arrests during strikes, and state repression as threats for workers in the Philippines. It adds over 50 trade unionists have been killed since President Duterte came to power in 2016. Also in the list are Bangladesh, Belarus, Brazil, and two new entries, Eswatini and Guatemala. The report also says workers faced record abuse of labor rights in the past year, from union bans to violence and murder. Incoming Philippine Central Bank Governor Felipe Medalla downplays the depreciation of the peso. He says it could be tempered by remittances, exports, and income from BPOs. He adds, a weaker peso is mainly due to a strong dollar, which has become more attractive as a safe haven asset around the world due to uncertainties brought by the war in Ukraine. On Monday, the peso briefly touched the 55 level against the U.S. dollar, the lowest in 17 years, before recovering to 54.78. In sports, champion Olympic pole vaulter E.J. Obiena bounces back from a bout with COVID-19 to rule a tournament in Sweden. Our very own Diane Castillo now joins us for more on this story. Diane, over to you.
Yes, Carmina, a fantastic performance by E.J. Obiena, who took the gold medal in the pole vault competition in Stavhopp Gala in Sweden. He jumped a very good height, 5.92 meters, to take the gold medal. This has been the highest that EJ has jumped so far after the securing the gold in the Southeast Asian Games in Vietnam, where he jumped a 5.46. After the SEA Games, he won another gold medal in Italy at 5.82. Unfortunately, he tested positive for COVID 2 weeks ago and was unable to train for over a week. And that's why this gold with a 5.92 is very, very impressive for EJ Obiena. Now, scoring the silver medal is good friend of EJ and bronze medalist of the Tokyo Olympics, Thiago Braz of Brazil, who jumped a 5.82. And in third place was the jumper from Norway, Simen Guttormsen. Now, this is a very encouraging performance from EJ as he strives to get in shape again for the World Outdoor Championships, which will take place in the United States in July. Of course, his long-term goal is to win a medal, a gold medal, of course, in the Paris 2024 Olympics. EJ will be competing next on Thursday in another competition in Stockholm, Sweden. Congratulations and mabuhay EJ Obiena. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Diane Castillejo there joining us on the line. Take care, Diane, and keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, switching gears now, global streaming giant Netflix actively working on building its cheaper ad-supported deal. But the company says there was no clear timeline. It was earlier revealed Netflix is eyeing to introduce a new cheaper subscription model following news the company had lost 200,000 subscribers in the first quarter of the year. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cban.com. And before we go, just a reminder, catch ANC's special coverage of the inauguration of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. on June 30th. That's tomorrow. We'll be talking to political analysts and incoming government officials. Our coverage begins at 9 in the morning, and that's going to last until 4 in the afternoon. Stay tuned for that. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC. We'll be right back.